National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2. My name is Bernice Herzog. My respondent's name is Dr. Sidney Busis. This is Thursday, January 28, 1993. Sidney, you mentioned that your sons all graduated from college with honor. What scholastic honors did you achieve?
Well, I wasn't as high as scholastic honor as my kids, I'll tell you that.
Surely you had...
I graduated with honor. I graduated grade school. I think that I was valedictorian in the little grade school class, whatever that was worth. In high school, I was sick a lot. I spent like 6 weeks of my senior year and out of school. I was in hospital a long time. They didn't know what it was at the time. As I look back, I think I probably had... probably had infectious mononucleosis, which wasn't really too recognized then. And I graduated, I'm sure, in the upper third of my class with honors, but I wasn't like the top student in the class. And in college, I also graduated with honors.
That's all right.
In high school, in medical school, I did what you call MAKE, AOA, which is like the Phi Beta Kappa medicine. And that's, we had a class of like, I forget, maybe 60 to 65 students, and only a handful that had made AOA. So that was
a... Well, to me, that's a...
That's
a big honor. Aside from your uncle, Lou Friedman, who else steered you into medicine and then into your specialty?
I think that...
Or was it Lou Friedman?
Well, I don't think Lou Friedman steered me into medicine. I think that I, as long as I can remember, I sort of wanted to be a doctor. I think that my Uncle Lou, who was a bachelor, was like the idol of the family. Anything that went wrong, I always had to ask Uncle Lou, talk to Uncle Lou. He was like worshipped by my mother and my aunt, and I think by my grandmother. And so he was certainly a model for all of us. But my father was a pharmacist, and I worked in a drugstore growing up, literally grew up in the back room of the drugstore. And my father, whom I told you about before, had great respect for physicians. And I used to work in the drugstore, and I knew that my daddy always thought his physicians were, like, very highly respected and so forth. And so I think that served to encourage me to go into medicine, too. I knew I didn't want to go into pharmacy, but I did like the idea of working with people, helping people. Sounds a little glitzy, not what's the word I want to say. I really wanted to help people. I sort of did feel that way. And I like science too. I was always good in science and math, and so that all fit in.
What about your specialty? Who?
Well, that I think was my Uncle Lou. I think that he decided, I guess, I was going to go in with him, and my mother thought I should go in with Uncle Lou, and you know, so. It sort of happened that way. As a matter of fact, it's interesting. When I was in medical school, ear, nose, and throat was not one of the flowers of the specialties because, first of all, just coming off the combined eye, ear, nose, and throat specialty, and penicillin was coming out. And a lot of the work then was with infection. It was primarily with infection. Today, it's entirely different. Today, otolaryngology is very broad. So broad that they think maybe should be subdivided. So people do plastic surgery, I do ear work. Other people do head and neck cancer work, so infectious work. In other words, it's very broad, but at that time it was very narrow. And when penicillin came out, I remember very clearly one of the doctors saying that you'll never ever open another ear. And that rang through my head years later when I was doing all these ear operations because I thought the penicillin would cure everything when it first came out. Anyhow, getting back to your point, when I was in medical school, and I was a senior, and I was, I say, you know, one of the top guys in the class, a committee of my class took me out to lunch, and they heard I was going into ENT, and they took me out to lunch and convinced me I was making a big mistake and wasting my life that I should go into something else. I shouldn't go into ENT. I should go into medicine or some other...
General practice or
science and research or something. But I was sort of touched by that, but I decided to stay with ENT. And then it's another thing that reflects upon our community is I went in the service after intern. When I came out of the service, I applied for residencies. And one of the best residencies in the country was the Mayo Clinic, which we were just talking about. And I applied and was accepted to the Mayo Clinic. However, I was told, and I intend to come back to Pittsburgh, and my kids, you know, they don't attend, but I intend to come back to Pittsburgh, and I was told that if I didn't take my residency at the Eye and Ear Hospital, I'd never get on the staff. It was almost like blackmail. Sure. So I gave up the Mayo Clinic and took the residency here for the new one to go stay in Pittsburgh, and I knew I wanted to be on that staff. Yeah. And I was only the second Jewish resident they had.
Oh, my. What year, incidentally, did you graduate or start practice? Start your practice.
I graduated medical school in 45, and I interned to 46, and I went in the Army to 48. 48 to 51, I was in training, and I started my practice in 1951.
Okay. Sid, I know that you have a lot to say about Sylvia, so your wife. So tell us more about her. What was her major in college, and how did her family practice Judaism, and did she pursue her career before the boys were born?
Yeah, Sylvia, in contradistinction, you as Judy was very bright. She was a straight-A student throughout college, straight-A's. And I had a good average, but not straight-A's. But she had straight-A's. That's the thing that really sunk me in college as far as average-wise. I decided to take physical chemistry while I was waiting to get into medical school, and I was taking calculus and physical chemistry at the same time. I'd never seemed to have enough math for the physical chemistry, and I got a C, which the first C I think I'd ever had in my life, and that sort of drew me down. But anyhow, Sylvia was straight-A. She was an English major. She was very popular in college, and I consider her the prettiest and smartest girl to get when I married her. And she went into social work. Pitt at that time had an outstanding school of social work. They were one of the leaders in the country. The people who worked there then were on to great positions. And she had a master's degree in social work. She's an MSW. And when I was in training, we got married in 1947 when I was in the service. In fact, I was married in the clothes even. I was married, I think I may have said this before, I was married in a borrowed uniform. I was a flight surgeon, and Kenny Lohmeyer and I were the two doctors on this base at Marshall Field, Kansas, and I didn't have to say, he lent me his uniform, he was about the same size. So I got married to Shumley Hotel, the old Shumley Hotel, where we got married in 1947. So, as I said, I didn't get to practice until 1951, and so for those years, Sylvia worked. First, she worked here at Montefiore Hospital. She was a medical caseworker. And then I decided to take an extra year. At that time, I was only required to take 2 years, but I felt I wanted to get more basic information, basic science. So I, on my own, took an extra year at the University of Pennsylvania in the Graduate School of Medicine. And Sylvia came there. Of course, she came with me. I mean, and we... And she worked there as a medical caseworker at they call it Hospital University of Pennsylvania. So she actually supported us. She was making a grand sum of $2,100 a year.
But that was enough then.
And I, as a resident, was making $41.66 a month. And the reason they figured it out was they didn't want me, God forbid, to have to pay income tax. I figured if they paid me under $500 a year, I would not have to pay taxes. So I earned $41.66 a month, and she earned $2,100 a year, and that's what we lived on, because our parents really didn't have that much, and so we didn't get much help, but I didn't get any help on that.
How about...
Her family?
Yes.
Her maiden name was Amder, A-M-D-U-R. It's a very, very large family. I think they're all nice-looking people, and a lot of them are very bright. She had a lot of bright cousins. Her father was Sam Amder, who was... one of the straightest person I've ever known in my life. Sam and Jay Anders sold insurance for Travelers Insurance Company. And he was really a law-abiding citizen, very sincere, he's really a wonderful man. He never got involved in the community much like my father did, but he was, they took care of his family. They lived in the Shady Side before it was fancy, before it became sort of fancy, it was on Shady Avenue. And they were dedicated to Judaism, they were very devout too. I considered him sort of on the conservative Orthodox side. He wasn't anymore.
More toward the Orthodox.
Yeah, well, more conservative towards the United States. Yeah.
Did Sylvia work after the boys grew up?
Well, we worked. No, she didn't. We had our first child in March of 1951, and she worked till near the end of that pregnancy. And once we started having children, she did not work. Different than today. I'm sure for today's world, she would have had a daycare, whatever, to be working. Because she certainly had the capacity, but in those days, it was sort of the norm to raise a family. And I might say, we raised four boys, and I think she did a wonderful job. And I think that there's something to be said for raising children. I think that's a full-time job, rather than pawning them off to daycare centers.
You mentioned before that you were in service when you got married. Were you involved afterwards in any civil rights movements or anything along that line?
No, I was not.
In your early days, or even now, did you ever experience any anti-Semitism? If so, when and where? Was it in the service? Did you notice?
I never noticed in the service.
How about in
school? When I was growing up, a lot of these people called kikes sometimes, and chinis. So there was anti-Semitism then. And as I said about the hospital, there was only one Jewish resident before me, that was Bernard Silverblatt, and then I came along, and I remember vividly cowering one time in the dressing room with two of the big doctors, two of the leaders of the hospital. We're talking, one said to the other, we've just taken an Italian resident. And he said, we've got two goddamn many foreigners around here. And I said, there was a lot of feeling against people who weren't white Anglo-Saxons at that time. But I can honestly say, no, I don't think that I ever really suffered from anti-Semitism. I know my father, I think I mentioned this to you before, was an activist. He was very concerned about the Nazis when I was on the North Side one time to try to break up the meeting. But, personally, I never felt a lot of anti-Semitism personally. I grew up on Navy Avenue next to a family named Patterson. Platt, my mother Patterson, but this was Platt. Patterson came later. But Jack Platt and I became very good friends, and I had an experience that probably very few Jews have had. And I was very involved in DMLA, which is a junior Masonic organization. And through Jack Platt, we were very close friends, and we used to go to Wilkinsburg to meetings. And I was accepted with open arms there. They knew I was Jewish. I was the only one, I think. And I know there was feeling at that time against Catholics, because they didn't think that you should pray to an intermediary. You should pray directly to God. And it had an impact on my life. It really did. I went through the chairs. I became the master counselor of the chapter. And later I was given an honorary degree at a Chevalier. And then just recently, I debated whether I should do it or not, but Silly said, why don't you do that? They wrote to me, and I got a distinguished alumnus or something. They said they gave me some real high honor, Legion of Honor or something like that. I had to go for a ceremony in Butler, Pennsylvania. And so I felt I had very strong ties to DMLA, and I felt it enriched me a lot in many ways, because they had ceremonies for your mother and things like that. It was very family oriented. And then when I finished that, I went into Masonic Lodge, the Brotherhood Lodge, and honestly, it never really caught me. I just didn't get too involved, and I was never active. In fact, today, if I went to some meeting, I'm not sure that I would even know the things you're supposed to know for the lodge, but with DMLA, it was different.
I'm not sure
what the question was.
Well, I think you covered it. Are any of your daughter-in-laws professionals, or are they following a career at this particular time? Or you can tell me their background if you wish.
Well, my oldest son is going through a very unpleasant divorce at the present time. His wife, she's still his wife, very highly educated. She has a Master of Public Administration, MPA, not MBA, MPA from the Kennedy School at Harvard, and she had a fine job with Pete Marwick, I guess it is, in Boston as a consultant, and she was a consultant in the public sector. When they were first married, she was involved a lot in setting up and redoing school systems, things like that, but she sort of gave that up, and she's really not doing that now. Right now, she's working job sharing for one of our city councilmen. She hasn't gone back into a job, but you really can't say what's going to happen, because going through the divorce, they play games, but she can't, what she's going to do and so forth. Anyway, my second daughter-in-law, Judy, her maiden name is Beck, living in Philadelphia. Her family is very interesting. Her mother is a Superior Court judge in the state of Pennsylvania. Her name is Phyllis Beck. She was the first, I'm not sure, first woman or first Jew in the Superior Court. I don't remember that. She, when she was reelected, she won by a landslide. She's a very wonderful person. And Judy's father, Aaron T. Beck, is a renowned psychiatrist. He developed a technique called cognitive therapy that's taught all over the world now, really. He's written several books. And Judy had a PhD, and his daughter, my daughter-in-law, his daughter, in special education. And then she got into this cognitive therapy. I think she got another degree in that. And she currently lectures all around on that. And she currently is the director of the Cognitive Center at the University of Pennsylvania. Third son, Jimmy, is married to a girl named Maureen Kelly. Jimmy, I would say, of our three sons, the one who was always most involved in Judaism, and he's the one who went to Aisha Torah and spent time there in Israel, and he always said he'd never marry anybody but a Jewish girl. He started going with Maureen, and, well, to make a long story short, they ended up getting married. They had an arrangement and they're expecting a child soon, as a matter of fact, at the end of February, this next month. And they had an arrangement whereby the child would be, you know, converted and raised Jewish. And she actually took all the training for conversion. And then at the last minute she decided she wouldn't convert, but she doesn't attend any of her services, or she, at least not to my knowledge, maybe, yes. But she does attend all the Jewish services with Jimmy. And she has been very dear to Sylvia. You know, you can't, the label really has nothing to do with personality. Here on the one hand, I told you Neil married a Jewish girl. Both parents are Jewish. They're going through a very, very difficult period. On the other hand, Maureen is Catholic. She's a writer. She's written two books with some other authors on growing up Catholic. But they were sort of tongue-in-cheek, poking fun at the sisters and the priests and so forth. And she and Sylvia just get along beautifully. And she's so thoughtful and kind. And so you just can't get mad at her. It's just a love, you know. And she, as I say, is a writer. And when Jimmy works for Booz Allen and Hamilton, a management consulting firm, he was stationed in, or living in Paris for 2 years in the Paris office. And while they were there, Maureen's French wasn't as good as his. He was fluent in French, so she had a hard time. She couldn't find a job. And so she and another expatriate wrote a book on how to find work and how in America to get organized in Paris. She says, oh, the kind of book that she should have had when she came there. And the book's in its second printing. It's done very well. Very well done book. It may come out in this country. It's now just in Paris. And now that they're living in Singapore, she's also doing some writing. So I would say she is a writer. While she's in this country, she worked for some of the major publishing firms like Prentice Hall and so forth.
That's the end of your daughters-in-law this time.
That's right. Our youngest son is not married.
Yes, you said that. When did you start working for or being interested in Jewish Family and Children's Service?
I can't tell you the year, but I remember vividly, I was in my office. Someone called me and said that I'd been nominated for the Board of Jewish Family and Children's Service. Would I accept? And I must confess I knew zilch about it, and I didn't know what he was talking about. But I thought it was my duty to do it, and out of curiosity, I said yes. And that's when I became involved. It had to be, I would guess,
approximately
the late 50s, I would say. And Nate Goodman was the executive at the time, and Nate and I got along very well. And so I think I went through this before, didn't I?
A little bit, that's right.
I became president of the agency, and then went on to national work. Became president of the National Association of Jewish Family Agencies. Then I became president of the National Association of Jewish Family Agencies.
Okay. Sydney, when your boys were growing up, did you vacation with them, or did they go to camp separately? And if you did go with them, what type of vacations did you plan?
Well, when our children were growing up, they were 8 years apart. They were born 1951 and 1959, the last one, 8 years apart. I felt very strongly about family vacations. Sylvia and I really never took a vacation, per se, without the boys. That doesn't mean they didn't go away alone. We sometimes I went to a lot of medical meetings, and Sylvia and I would just go to medical meetings alone, went to Israel a couple of times alone, but we never took like a vacation, a pure vacation without the children. Every summer we tried to do something special with the kids. When they were young, we used to take them to the White Sands Motel in Ventnor. And then later we took them to Beach Haven. We'd rent a house at Beach Haven. I guess there weren't apartments in this little house or whatever. And then two of the nicest vacations we had, we went out west. I decided we should see the western part of our country. So 1 year we flew to save time, because I could only take off a couple of weeks. Well, the first time I took off 2 weeks, second time 3 weeks. We flew to Denver, and I rented a car, station wagon in those days. They had the van, but in those days were station wagons. We drove up to Cheyenne, Wyoming, and then to South Dakota, to Rapid City and the Black Hills, and then across Wyoming to Yellowstone and the Grand Tetons, and then down to Salt Lake City and flew home from there. And that was a wonderful trip with the four boys. I would rent one of those U-Haul car top carriers for that, and load up the car with the four boys to do that. And the second year, we flew to Denver and went south to Colorado Springs and across the middle of Colorado to Montrose and all the way down to Ouray and the Mesa Verde Indian area there, and then the Four Corners, Grand Canyon, and then across to California, and finally up California, San Francisco, and flew home. That was an exciting time because we got to California. We were at St. Yosemite, and we had our tickets, and there was an airline strike. And we didn't know how we'd get back, and I had to get back. I was like in the midst of a high blood crisis, and I had to get back. So I would get up every morning and run down to the hotel. American Airlines, the only airline flying, and I stand at the desk and wait in line, hoping I could get a ticket. And I was talking to the young woman, I remember it, and she said, oh, something just came up, and she grabbed it. So we got four tickets from San Francisco to Chicago. We couldn't get by air from Chicago to Pittsburgh, so we had to take a train from Chicago to Pittsburgh to finally get back.
Well,
so we did that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, that's a wonderful vacation and an education.
We took our four boys to Israel in 1970. Did I tell you about that? I think I may have. We had a wonderful time. We took them in 1970. They're all at different stages in their life at that time. Neil was just in college, and Richie, our second son, was a senior in high school looking at colleges. And then two younger boys, one was in high school and one was in grade school. And it really influenced Richie's life because he was a senior, and we'd arranged for the UJA to have a car and driver, and our driver was Dan Turk, who's become a close family friend since then. And we see him many times, I've been there a number of times.
Isn't that when he wanted archaeology or got
that's
interested?
That's right, that's what I'm saying. So I thought I told you that.
Yes.
So he took us through all the tales, and that's when Richie got involved in archaeology. So that was a wonderful trip.
If they only remember all those things.
Well, I think it has an impact on them. Did I mention to you what Jimmy said coming out of Yad Vashem? Sylvia always cracks up in Yad Vashem. That's a memorial
yes,
to the 6 million, of course. And so we had a service, and then we came out, and Sylvia's teary-eyed, and Jimmy says, Mother says, do you think it could ever happen in the United States? And Sylvia said, well, yeah, I really don't know. And then Jimmy thought, well, he said, what do you think it was going to happen? We'd be smart enough to get out in time.
Right.
So I think it's had an impact on all the boys.
I'm sure. And what a wonderful experience. Could you contrast the way you were raised with the way you raised your children? Permissive, religiously, just any way.
Well,
that
for
you...
one thing, don't forget, I grew up in the Depression. I think I told you about awesome. How we grew up in the house and everything. I described that to you, and I told you I could barely pay for the college education. It was $300 a year. And when Neil went off to Yale, it was like $14,000 a year. By the time Billy went off to Yale, it was $25,000 or $26,000 a year. There's a big difference. I think that... I don't know whether it was my parents or was I, but I think I was more of a homebody. I guess the world changed. By the time
I think
we
it's
raised
part
our
of the
kids,
times.
Yeah, by the time we raised our kids, I was determined that they should get the best education,
right.
Regardless of where it is. Fortunately, I was able to afford it, so we sent them off these fancy schools. As far as values are concerned, I think that I think I had good training from my parents. I think we had the same value system for our children. Of course, you know, as far as the world changing is concerned, we're making the statistics. When I was growing up, it never occurred to me to marry anybody but a Jewish girl, and divorce was sort of unthinkable. So now we have 50%, you know, we have the statistics. One is getting divorced and one married a non-Jewish girl.
How about religiously? I mean...
Religiously, I can honestly say I have some regrets. I think that I was more religiously involved than my children. And that's because we belong to a conservative congregation. And my father was friendly with the rabbi and the cousin, the cantor. And I went to Hebrew school 4 days a week. And I went to shul more than... And I think that I had more of a feeling for Judaism than my kids did. And I must say, I don't think the Sunday school was any better. The Sunday school that I went to was...
Were your boys bar mitzvahed?
Our kids were all bar mitzvahed. My determination should be, Sylvia was raised at Temple, and of course they didn't have bar mitzvah, so I wanted our boys to be bar mitzvah, so we joined B'nai Israel, where I was bar mitzvah, Neil was bar mitzvah there, and Leon Rubenstein, who had the Wood Echo camp and taught Hebrew, tutored Neil, and he had a wonderful bar mitzvah at B'nai Israel. And then they changed the rules at B'nai Israel, and they said that they had to have the training there rather than have a tutor. And at that point, we had moved to Point Breeze. There's no way we could get them there. And they were very unyielding, and it was a very unpleasant experience with them. The rabbi was really very nasty at the time. He's since left there. As a matter of fact, he had been asked to leave, so I don't think it was just our experience. And so we joined Tree of Life. So we belonged to Tree of Life and Temple for many years, and the other boys were all bar mitzvah Tree of Life. When Billy came along, the youngest one, he read all the Torah courses, because in a conservative bar mitzvah, there are like 7 aliyahs at least, and he read every single Torah course for each aliyah. So he really was knowledgeable about Hebrew at the time. But I don't, I really, if I had to do it over again, knowing what I know now, I don't know, I might consider day schools. But at the time, we thought we were doing the right thing. I think my children have a deep feeling for Judaism. I don't think they have, in my view, perhaps enough of knowledge about the practice of Judaism, but they're all committed Jews. I can say that honestly. My oldest son, Neil, who lives in Pittsburgh, is starting to get involved in the Jewish community and the Federation, UJA, and things like that. And Jimmy, of course, who travels around the world. Every place he goes, he's the first thing he does look for a shul.
So, that's very interesting.
And our children in Philadelphia are very involved, and they belong to conservative congregation. And they're quite involved in that.